This is an Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash production.
Another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy Radio Show here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. Or thank you to all of you who are listening later on this week over on the Take It Easy Podcast Network. I appreciate each and every one of you for the loyalty that you show to this show, to this radio station, and to the Take It Easy Network. My name is Kyle, taking you through the next hour on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. It is presently 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 o'clock out east right now. Happy Thursday, everybody, or happy Saturday, depending on when it is that you're tuning in to this show. We start off the show as I like to do, because when we record the podcast, we're always doing it very early in the morning, reacting to the day before, previewing the day ahead. So, Cubs are down 7-0 on the Pittsburgh Pirates, who might not have the number one pick in the draft right now. Arizona is making a deep fall towards that number one pick. The Pirates got to win a couple more games, and they will overtake that number two spot. Whatever you want to call it, it's generally better to have a higher pick, especially when you're a rebuilding franchise like the Pittsburgh Pirates. And in the first inning today, the San Francisco Giants are up 1-0 on the Colorado Rockies. A big, big time game for the Giants. They win today, their magic number goes down to 2, meaning all the Giants have to do is split a four game series at home against the San Diego Padres this weekend, who are already locked into the number 4 seed. By the time we're on the radio show next week, the Padres will be playing Game 2 in their first playoff game in 14 seasons. Shout out to my San Diego Super Padres. Shout out to the 6192. We're up in Northern California, but San Diego, always, forever, let's go Padres. We're going to be in the playoffs right there. Giants are trying to make their lives a whole lot easier with a win today. We'll keep monitoring that. I'll check in sooner or later. Great show planned today. We got NFL retractions coming up. We got playoff basketball. We might talk more baseball. We might talk hockey. I don't have any college football, but we did get deep into that last week. But first, where I want to start today is actually where we left off last week. Because if you tuned in to the radio show last week, by the way, it's still available over on Open Talk 313 Archives, as well as going down on the Take It Easy Podcast Network, you know that I spent time talking about college football is too hot right now. Everything going on with politicization of college football, the fact that I am pro-labor, and the fact that usually in sports, being a hypocrite is fun because sports don't matter. We can laugh at those things. But when it comes to real life issues that impact not just lives, but money, and also, you know, just the real factors of life, like the way we process the world, the way we interact with people, and the way resources are distributed, which also impacts people, these things are not okay to be hypocritical. And so now that college football has become politicized, now that everything is hot, and as we talked about, the one side of the political spectrum, which this time is more conservative, are using college football as a re-election strategy, both in local and federal elections, which is a genius, genius strategy because you can appeal to a lot of people through the prism of sports. All of it is too hot for me right now. And after I talked about that, I kind of looked at that and said, you know, this is really good. Like, I am impressed with myself, and maybe I should heed my own advice here, because if it works with college football, and this past weekend I only watched 20 minutes of a UCF-Georgia Tech fourth quarter game just to make sure UCF would hold off Georgia Tech, and this weekend I don't plan to watch any college football on Saturday. I don't plan to really watch any sports on Saturday. The Padres have already locked up a spot. I'll scoreboard watch baseball, as I've been doing for the last month. The Lakers and Nuggets might be in a game five, which I guess would be the only thing I would consider going into. But regardless, I started to heed my own advice on this. And I thought, if this works with college football, why can't it work with other stuff that will make me unhappy to partake in, that I would gleefully have partaken in, not just before an election season and not just before COVID-19, but also during the COVID-19 pandemic, as we saw the Black Lives Matter movement come into fruition with a head-on, I guess, nationwide race reckoning when it came to the George Floyd situation, Breonna Taylor, Rayshard Brooks, and then Jacob Blake, all within the span of about 2 months. These were things where you constantly are consuming mass media, consuming different things here and there, and it generally makes you unhappy. All of these things make you unhappy. This is the result of a post-1990s America in which everyone had to look out for their own incentives, and this goes all the way down from politicians deciding that of their campaign and the whole point of their term in office was to focus on being reelected instead of serving the position that they held. We had media in America. Media became tied to revenue for the first time beginning in the 1990s. And it began with 24-hour news channels like CNN and Ted Turner and expanded over to print media. And it basically led to the decline of magazines, and social media was kind of the nail in the coffin for a lot of print media. In a post-1990s world where everything is tied to revenue and everyone has to look out for their own interests, it is nearly impossible to find reliable information that is not totally tainted for fear-mongering and tainted for money and to draw not necessarily eyeballs, because eyeballs doesn't really matter. The thing about getting clicks, that's not actually important. What is important is advertising revenue, and what is important is the ability to, in the case of social media, sell data by collecting clicks. And now that social media is so impactful, I was hearing a great conversation about this the other day, about if you wanted to quit Facebook, if you wanted to quit Twitter and you were a small business, you were a media reporter, or you worked in media, it would be physically impossible. You would evaporate from the face of the earth because all of these things live on social media. Advertising on social media, putting your content out on social media is a necessity in the modern world. It is unfortunate that we've gotten to this point. I really want to watch this new Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma, that explains more of it. From what I hear, it seems interesting. I can't speak for it. I probably should have done it in show prep today because it seems really good. But regardless, it's the whole idea is it's hard to find anything reliable in this post-1990s world that is now culminating in what is essentially our Vietnam intersecting with the civil rights movement. Vietnam being the equivalent of COVID and civil rights movement. Obviously, we are having mass protests in the street all the time, which came to a head this week when not only did the people who killed Breonna Taylor not get charged, but it kind of poured salt in the wound by charging the officers for endangering the white neighbors. Seemed like that one was pouring salt in the wound. If you're going to go off with no charges, but the only actual charges are for the endangerment of the people you weren't raiding, gosh, it just feels like you're pouring salt in the wounds on America after this has been a polarizing issue for 4 months. This was an issue that was grappled with by not just media, not just by corporate America, not just by print magazine and print news. It became kind of a focal point of this, and a common phrase that you heard a lot, not just in sports, but all over the world was, or at least America, but also the world. The world got involved in this, not just America. You had arrest the killers of Breonna Taylor. And now we know that that is not going to happen, which the only reason it would have happened is the public pressure to do so, because there is no incentive to break the police unions. There is no incentive to tame the public opinion because it will die down. This is the unfortunate situation, is that it'll all die down. Because the fact that nobody gets arrested in this case, or at least, I'm sorry, not arrested, charged in this case, is not new. We can go from Tamir Rice down to Philando Castile, to Sandra Bland, all the way to Stephon Clark here in Sacramento. Or we can go to Jacob Blake, which will probably be the case, even though we have indisputable proof of this. Or go all the way back to Rodney King, or even most recently Trayvon Martin back in 2012, where charges were made, but then found innocent. And that was a racial reckoning. These things are not new. They've been going on forever. So that's not the surprising part. It's also not surprising that the quote-unquote protesting part has been hijacked by media outlets left and right, which is why I'm just not going to address it. Just not going to address it. Which brings me back to my original point on college football, which is everything has become so diluted and so hot that it just doesn't add any material. It is addictive. Fear-mongering is addictive. It's why media companies figured this out about 30 years ago with the rise of 24-hour cable news, which has now become just a mainstay. And then you also had the rise of not just traditional news, but also issue-based news, as in, like, there is now conservative news. There is progressive news. There is liberal news. These are all rises of the 1990s, and now we have come to this reckoning where you literally cannot trust the things you are reading anymore. Both sides of the argument. Cannot trust the things that you are reading anymore. You can trust that the facts being reported are correct, but you are being misled by the headlines that are grabbing your attention. You are being misled by the way things are being framed in the articles you are actually reading, which, again, I feel like the average American is something like they see 40 headlines before they actually click on a story. So the headlines are the thing that matters, and it's why you get to this point where 7% of protests for Black Lives Matter are violent, yet 42% of Americans associate all protests with violence. That is the doing of traditional media as we know it. And by traditional, I mean what has become of this creation. So after talking to you on the podcast last week, I just stopped. And I've generally been happier, even though I focus more on joy versus happiness. There cannot be this imbalance of chemicals. There cannot be this imbalance between joy and happiness. Happiness is way up because we are living isolated, because we are slowly but steadily working our way back, and we spend more time by ourselves. And if you don't have anything that you're pursuing with a passion, and you don't have anything in your life that brings you real fulfillment and joy, you're not just going to work every day seeking money and just getting out of there and collecting your paycheck, or you work for a corporation where you're constantly concerned about layoffs and you're constantly concerned about going to happen if you share information with someone, or you're constantly concerned and there's this fear all the time about what is going to happen next, and you're being forced to compete and be on your toes all the time, and that is the most productive work because it's not. When that goes on all the time, what you're going to find is, unfortunately, more people who are distraught and have this chemical imbalance. There are two happiness chemicals and two joy chemicals. I try to focus more on joy, but it's all about finding a balance, because we, no matter what we do, we cannot escape the dopamine and we cannot escape the endorphins. Well, I guess we can escape the endorphins. I guess just when you poop, that's the only time you can't escape endorphins. I for those who don't know, endorphins, runner's high. These are the things that mask physical pain. It happens when you're giving birth. It's what happens when you exercise really hard. It's what happens when you poop and you contract your intestine. It happens when you laugh really hard and you say, please stop, it hurts. You laugh so hard, it hurts. Those are endorphins. Dopamine, highly addictive thing you get from, you know, drinking, smoking, gambling, sex, All basically anything that can be addictive. Using your phone is another example of a high dopamine activity, or fear-mongering and looking through headlines. And I know it seems like I'm going back and forth, but trust me, this will all tie together in a second. The two joy chemicals, serotonin, pride, feelings of accomplishment. What happens when you cross something off your list, on your to-do list? You get that jolt of serotonin. When we have graduation ceremonies for people, that's serotonin, oxytocin, love, trust, respect, things that are not built in a day or even a week or even a year, things that are built over a long period of time and can only interact with something that we strive for and would willingly sacrifice for. That might be the willingness for me to wake up at 5:30 every single morning and record a podcast. There's nothing I would rather do than that. Or it can be building a relationship with another human being, anything we would be willing to sacrifice for, a worthy cause that is willing, we are willing to sacrifice for, gives us oxytocin. So basically, money buys you happiness, and the best one I've ever heard is basically, the best phrase I've heard around that is that money cannot buy you happiness, but it makes the down payment on happiness. We do not get any happier once we make $75,000 a year, and it actually starts going down on happiness the more money we make. All of this is meant to say, I have a lot of joy in my life. I have a lot of pride in what I do. I build love and trust and respect, or at least I try to commit every single day to fostering those relationships. I sharpen the saw and continue to work. And I don't know whether other people feel that way. I know a lot of people don't. I don't know how you relate if you're listening to this podcast. or this radio show, I forgot this is the radio show technically. If you're listening to this, I don't know how specifically you relate to that, but most people usually have an imbalance where they have this dopamine high versus this lack of serotonin, oxytocin, etc. Trying to find a balance is the healthiest thing. All of these need to be operating in a balance. It's why alcoholism is dangerous. It's why addiction is dangerous. It's why using your phone too much is America's great addiction. And it's why scrolling through headlines on Twitter and on your newsfeed for hours at a time is highly, highly addictive and highly, highly unhealthy. So I've just cut it out. It's a dopamine hit. If there are things that are important, I will know what they are. It's usually a flavor of the week type thing when it comes to what is the big headline of the week. It is traditionally a flavor of the week. But I've decided that I know how the end game works here. When it comes to Breonna Taylor, when they announced that they are boarding up the city and basically going on lockdown before the verdict is even announced, you know how the end game is going to go. When Ruth Bader Ginsburg passes away, and there is nothing stopping the Republicans from adding another seat other than the potential of public backlash, you know how this ending is going to go. The news, and you see last week, California wildfires spreading, but then by Friday, you hear the news, good news, the air quality is returning to healthy as winds start to push the fires out. You know how that story is going to end. Or when you're following the 2020 election, if Joe Biden wins, you know how that story is going to end. If Trump wins, you know how that story is going to end. And this happens in sports a lot. It is why sports reflect society and why we can have these deeper conversations. In the NBA, only four times in NBA history has a team without one of the four best players in the sport won the championship. 2011 Mavericks, 2004 Detroit Pistons, 1999 San Antonio Spurs, 1978 Seattle Supersonics. Only time in the history of the sport that a team has not won the championship with the top four players. So it is safe to guess, because super teams have always existed, and we've talked about before how right now is a once in a two-decade opportunity because the NBA has been thrown out of whack. This is not a natural course of events. The Warriors were supposed to stick together for at least five seasons. They were not supposed to 3 years. And they did. Kevin Durant chose to not join another super team to fill the void the Warriors had created. And the Philadelphia 76ers were supposed to be the second super team, but the process got messed up because they drafted Markelle Fultz over Jason Tatum and Jahlil Okafor over Kristaps Porzingis. They were supposed to have four superstars all entering their prime at the same time. Basically, we know how the NBA season typically is going to end. This year is an exception because of that. We know how the NBA season is going to end. But what makes it interesting is watching how you get there. The best example I've ever heard, and we're bouncing from Breonna Taylor to dopamine to oxytocin to the NBA to now the movie Independence Day from 1996. You know at the end of the movie the aliens are not going to win. You know Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum are going to win in the end. But you are captivated by how you're going to get there. And even when you've seen the movie one time, when you watch it a second and third time, you are excited to figure out how they get there, even though you know exactly how they get there, and you know that the aliens don't win in the end. But I have decided, and I think it would be healthy for most people too, so I'd like to share it at the very least. I have decided, and I would like to share, that knowing the process is not worth it anymore.
Hey, Kyle?
It is not. Yes? Yeah?
Hey, sorry, you do have a caller on the line. I don't know if you want to go to him now or later.
Thanks for putting it in. I know I told you before we have a power outage in here, so I can't really see who it is. Do you know who the caller is?
I didn't take their name. They're calling from a 346 area code. I did a bad job.
Okay.
I didn't take their name.
Anyways, I guess let me finish this first. We'll go to him in 2 minutes. All right, Martez?
Okay.
Thank you for letting me know, by the way.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, thanks. Where I was at basically is I've kind of It was actually good that it got broken up because I have just been kind of rambling for a while here. But anyways, the whole point is that that's no longer worth it for me. I have concluded for myself it is no longer worth it to see how this is going to continue and how we are going to get to the point that we are at. It is not worth the time to consume what it is. And so as the conversation turns to police officers being killed in Louisville following protests, and it comes down to guy in Kenosha shooting two people and armed militias showing up to protect people. And as those are the headlines that are going to get hijacked, and as you continue to look through the headlines, it's not, I have deemed it is not worth it anymore. Regardless of how the election turns out, whoever wins, because it's a 50-50 shot which way it turns out, whichever way it ends, I know what happens next. I said 18 months ago that we would be in a Joe Biden versus Donald Trump presidential campaign, and we know what the end game is going to be either way, no matter who wins. And so I have decided myself, after I guess what I was talking about last week on the radio show, it is no longer worth it to continue going through this time and time again. With that being said, let us see who is on the line here on the Take It Easy Radio Show.
Yep, it's actually Ian.
Ian, oh my goodness, yes. Ian Campbell, I know you're going to have a little bit of a baby voice here, but Ian, welcome on the radio show. How are you doing?
Good.
There you go. How you doing, Ian? So you got a question real quick here for me, because I'm happy to just talk to you. This is I know it's harder to get you on the podcast because you have to send in questions and stuff, and they're just pre-recorded. But what are you thinking here, Ian? What you got for me?
What do you think is going to prove the next few years of the Clippers' future?
Ian, I have four topics written down here that I wanted to talk about today.
That's a little fun.
I don't know. I don't know if he's talking to me anymore. But anyway, I'm glad that you brought this up, because one of the four things I had written down here was cell retractions, what we talked about before, football is king, and the Clippers, because the Clippers have no first-round draft picks until 2027. And Kawhi Leonard and Paul George can both become free agents after next season. So where the Clippers go from here is fairly obvious, because the Clippers, they are committed to Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. They gave all of their assets to Oklahoma City, like four draft picks and three pick swaps to Oklahoma City to get Paul George. They gave up Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They gave up Danilo Gallinari. They are committed right here, right now, to what is happening. And what we are seeing is a reckoning for the Clippers, because there are going to be Paul George trade rumors this offseason. There are going to be Montrezl Harrell questions, because it seems fairly obvious they're going to lose him in free agency. He is kind of the big guy in free agency. There's about seven teams. This is his first time hitting free agency. He's going to be after the money. This is a big thing for Trez Harrell and company. And so the Clippers from here have to figure out, how do we build a championship team in 2021? Because after that, the water is kind of murky. Now, if they don't want to commit to Paul George and Kawhi Leonard again, because again, I think most people would have said the Clippers are one of the two best teams in the league this year. I think without question, people were pretty confident in the Clippers making the conference finals, even up to game seven. Like, people were confident that they would get a crack at the Lakers and were probably a better team than the Lakers. But obviously it fell apart. Paul George and Kawhi Leonard had 0 points in game seven, yada, yada, yada. We know the story of that so far. And so they're going to have to recommit. They're going to have to retool, because they really have no other choice. They can try and bring back Trez, And then after Kawhi and Paul George inevitably depart, or one of the two inevitably departs, and Kawhi Leonard, what looks like now, I think we can kind of confirm, is that Kawhi Leonard has played the best basketball of his career. He's entering his physical prime. He's going to be he's in his physical prime. He's 30 years old. James Harden is 32, and you start to see that's the decline period. 28 to 31 is kind of the peak time for a player's career. 28 to 31 is the physical prime of basketball players. And so Kawhi Leonard is in this position where his knees are shot. He's got them Todd Gurley knees at this point. That's why he has to go through all the load management. And he's already 30 years old. And so if they don't want to commit to Paul George, you can get a lot of assets in return for him. I'm not sure what team it's going to be, and I'm fairly confident you can't get a player better than Paul George in a trade. I don't even think the Bucks would give up Chris Middleton at this point for him, and I don't think the Clippers would really want Chris Middleton at this stage of the game. Like, that would just be a totally bonkers version of what could happen, but that's the only guy I can think of where you can get a player better than Paul George. But they would have to get a bunch of young guys and replenish that depth that they have before. And after 2021, I think they're kind of in trouble, kind of a lose-lose situation for the Clippers. But this is what they signed up for. I think now they are just having to come to a real reckoning because they didn't even get close. Like, they should have won that series against the Nuggets. They were up 3-1. They were up 15 in Game 5. They were up 19 in Game 6. They were up double digits in Game 7. They were a better team than the Nuggets. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. But they didn't even – they're gone now, obviously. They didn't even get close to winning the whole thing. They didn't even get to a matchup with the Lakers. And that is going to stir some panic. They have no choice. They have to recommit to the team they have now. They could trade Paul George, and I mean, I'm just doing quick trades in my head at, like, who would even want Paul George? Because maybe the Bucks would want Paul George. Maybe one of these teams that is fringe playoffs would want Paul George, but I don't think the Bulls are going to give up a ton for Paul George. I don't think the Bulls would give up, you know, Kobe White, a combination of two between Kobe White, Wendell Carter, Lauri Markkanen, and Zach LaVine. Like, I don't think they would give up two of those guys to get Paul George. I also don't think they would give up a bunch of draft picks, or the Clippers would trade for a bunch of draft picks, because, again, you've got 1 year left with Kawhi Leonard. And, you know, Kawhi might come back. But if I'm the Clippers, do I want Kawhi back? Because he'll be headed into his age 31 season. His knees are obviously shot. We're seeing what's happening with the Rockets right now as they try to come to grips with what to do with two guys that are at age 32. The Thunder had to come to that reckoning last offseason with Paul George and Russell Westbrook, and Paul George made their decision easy, but they had to have a real reckoning about, hey, what are we going to do? What do we want to do going forward? How do we plan that out? And the Clippers don't have assets to do that. They can't trade Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard holds all the chips in the situation. They can trade Paul George. I just don't think they will trade Paul George, because that means they don't get to have one more run with Kawhi and Paul George. They would only do it if it is a Daryl Morey, Russell Westbrook to Houston kind of trade, where they can get a player better than Paul George back in exchange. But I don't think there are any of those guys right now, unless it's James Harden. But then I don't think that it's even worth it for the Clippers to commit to James Harden, Kawhi Leonard, Lou Williams, Zubac, and a bunch of minimum contract guys. I just don't think that's worth it for them at that stage of the game. And so what are the Clippers going to do? They're going to go back with the same team. They're going to run it back with the same coach. They're going to replace Montrezl Harrell with somebody in free agency. I'm not sure who it's going to be. They're probably going to be able to re-sign Morris. We haven't seen the inclination that Marcus Morris wants to go somewhere else. It seems like they're going to be able to re-sign Morris. If they don't, that's a really tough break for them. Because obviously they traded Mo Harkless, who had team control, I think. I'm not positive, but they gave up another first-round pick in that trade. So if we are, if we're being real, I just don't think this is going to work out very well for the Clippers, barring them winning the 2021 championship. And even then, much like the Raptors kind of blew up and lost Kawhi Leonard, and I know the Raptors were good this year. They're not going to be as good next year. It's just not a sustainable model. Paying four guys the max like they're going to versus Kawhi Leonard just making a single max. As much as I want to think that things are going well for the Clippers, I just don't. So I hope that answered your question, Ian, a bit, because you're talking about what does the future hold for them. It holds a lot of dumping guys, getting lottery picks, and probably becoming the new Bulls or the new Mets. Like, one of those two things. Because, again, they don't have very many lottery picks. They have assets. They can trade for lottery picks. If Paul George and Kawhi Leonard leave, maybe they can convince Giannis to come. But, again, that's a long shot. I don't think there's many. Like, the backup plan for teams that don't get Giannis is Oladipo and Gordon Hayward and, you know, guys like that. And, obviously, Lou Williams has a lot of value. Trent Harrell has a lot of value. They'll tear it down depending on what Kawhi and Paul George do after the 2021 season. So thanks for your question, Ian. Thanks for calling. I'm glad I was finally able to get you on the show just straight up there. So thank you for asking that. And it was actually a perfect segue because it was one of the things that I wanted to talk about today. So thank you, Ian Campbell, for asking that question. I think he put his last name in there. But thank you for putting out that question for all of us here today. San Francisco Giants. They are not messing up. Shout out to the San Francisco Giants. They are currently leading the Colorado Rockies, at least as the last time I checked. They lead the Colorado Rockies right now by a score of 3-2-0. They scored another run in the second inning while I was talking about the Los Angeles Clippers. Again, the Giants' magic number becomes 2 with that win, but by the time the radio show comes up next week, we will be knees deep in baseball playoffs. I think that might be the main topic next week, apart from a crappy Thursday night football game. I think the Bucks and the Bears are next week, but obviously we got the Dolphins and Jags. I put this out on the Instagram. Check out Take It Easy Podcast and Comical Sports Memes on Instagram. I don't think there can be a worse quarterback matchup than the one we're watching tonight. Like, I give you the 32 quarterbacks in the NFL. I don't think you can get a worse quarterback matchup. Obviously, Nick Mullins is playing for Jimmy Garoppolo, and Jeff Driscoll is playing for Drew Locke. Yeah, like that. But if we're talking about the 32 opening day starters, which, again, you can throw Justin Herbert in there. I think he's better than Minshew and Ryan Fitzpatrick. I don't think you can get a worse quarterback matchup than the one we're watching tonight. With that being said, I am so fascinated to see how this plays out in terms of ratings numbers. I will probably follow this up on the podcast, so be on the lookout for that, I suppose. But I am fascinated to see how these numbers work out. One of the things that was one of the most stunning and shocking things I have ever seen was back in 2018 when Mullins and the San Francisco 49ers, who at that time had a 2-8 record, faced off against the Oakland Raiders, who at that time had an equal 2-9 record. I believe they had both 2 wins. It was a battle for maybe what would be the first pick in the NFL draft. At the time, both teams were 1-2 in terms of the worst teams in the league. The 49ers had a third-string quarterback in Nick Mullins in the game. The Raiders were obviously just traded Khalil Mack, just traded Amari Cooper. This is the beginning of the teardown that John Gruden had and the 3-year rebuild that has now built them up into a team that has a chance to make the playoffs this year. That game did double the rating numbers on Fox as an NBA Thursday night game between the Boston Celtics and the Philadelphia 76ers. They had met in the playoffs last year. Jimmy Butler was not a Sixer yet, to be fair. But this was the 76ers and the Celtics. Two very, very good teams. In fact, teams that finished that year, or sorry, finished the year before, the 2-3 seeds in the East and the 3-4 seeds that year in the Eastern Conference. Nick Mullins and the two worst teams in the NFL did double the ratings of a 76ers and Celtics basketball game. It was that moment, and I still point to it nearly 2 years later, precisely 22 months later, I point to that moment as when I realized football is king in the American sports landscape. Football dominates every podcast I do. Football dominates my Instagram feed. On Comical Sports Memes, we have had numbers stay stagnant for months at a time. This is during not just the hiatus, during NBA playoffs, during baseball season, during college basketball March Madness. Numbers have stayed stagnant for months at a time, but when football season starts, numbers skyrocket by nearly 100%. We double our followers from the start of the season to the end of the season. In terms of interactions, we go from nearly 200,000 people interacting to 1.6 million people interacting, got as high during the NFL draft as 2 million people interacting with the page. Nearly 10 times when football rolls around and football is dominating attention like the NFL draft did this year, 10 times as much as the regular NBA time, NBA pause, whatever you may call it. So this is why I'm so fascinated by this, because I understand baseball is declining. It is a whole lot of older white people that like baseball. Baseball is the sport of my childhood. I will love it forever. Hockey is a regional sport. College football is becoming increasingly a regional sport, despite how much money is involved with it. Soccer is becoming a regional sport. UFC, boxing. The thing that I found fascinating is that there are three major sports in America. There is football, there is college football, there is football, and there is the NBA. Those are the three national sports, mostly because they have big TV contracts with ESPN and Fox. And those are the things that we're consuming media, et cetera, et cetera. They'll talk about the things that they cover. Everyone after that, and college football is kind of teetering in the middle there, everyone's got their niche sports after that. It's fun interacting with people who are NBA fans, but also big UFC fans. It is really fun interacting with people who love the NBA, but also love hockey. A lot of them are from Canada. Shout out to my boys, the Three and the Key. I love interacting with people who love football, but are also like, hey, did you watch Jacob deGrom pitch the other day? And I say, who the hell is Jacob deGrom? It's an inside joke for people who have tuned in deep for a long time to the podcast. It is my worst take ever that I say, who the hell was Jacob deGrom? So basically, I love these niche sports, but there are a few sports that are national sports. NBA, college football, and the NFL. Everything else is a niche sport. And baseball and college football are kind of in their own tier two, but college football and baseball have people who can't tell you a single thing about it. In the NBA, you at least know LeBron James. You know probably Giannis. You know Kawhi. You know Kevin Durant, even if you're not an NBA fan. There are people who genuinely don't know baseball at all. Like, can't tell you a single player who plays for the team. Mike Trout is as recognizable as Caris LeVert. So basically, what I am fascinated by is what the ratings will look like tomorrow between an NBA Conn Finals game and an NFL Thursday game. Now, I don't think the Dolphins and Jaguars are on Fox, and that's going to dilute the numbers. If it were on Fox like that Raiders and 49ers game was, I think the numbers would be totally diluted. I might be surprised to see what it ends up being, but I think that Dolphins and Jaguars, with the worst possible quarterback matchup in the NFL, with two teams that are going to finish near the bottom of the draft, and two teams that, quite frankly, just aren't that exciting. Like, at the very least, you can watch the 49ers game because Nick Mullins is throwing 450 yards in that Raiders-49ers game. Yeah, Gardner Minshew's interesting, but we know he's got flaws. We know Gardner Minshew, you take him out of the pocket, there's nothing he can really do with the ball. And he's a sixth-round pick, and people want to believe he's a franchise guy, but we saw at the end of last year just how bad Gardner Minshew actually is and how we all fell in love with him in the first 6 weeks of the season, how he kept the job over Nick Foles. But we saw at the end of the season he really wasn't very good, and I think we're going to see something similar later on in the season again. And the Jaguars are going to go get their guy at quarterback, and they're going to finish with two or three wins. They're going to be in a position to draft one of the big three, even if it's not Trevor Lawrence. Yet I still think it's going to do better than that Nuggets-Lakers game tonight. As crazy as it seems, I think it might do better than that Nuggets-Lakers game, even if it's on NFL Network and you have to go find it as a niche thing. Even if you're watching this game and all of a sudden you have the Denver Nuggets right there with the Lakers, it's nearly a tie game. That all might happen, and yet still we are going to watch this game tonight. I'm going to watch both if my internet ever comes back on. And I want to see what the ratings look like tomorrow, because we have never, obviously NBA has never gone into September with playoffs. We've never seen the NFL go head-to-head with NBA playoffs. We've never needed to. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that goes tonight, because football is king in the American sports landscape. I learned that, at least it became officially clear for me, when the Nick Mullins game doubled the numbers of a Celtics-Philadelphia NBA game. It became painfully clear that, yes, the NBA, kind of college football, kind of baseball, and the NFL are national sports. But football is king. And I'm interested to see whether making it an NBA playoff game, more specifically a Western Conference final game, would impact the numbers the way a regular season NBA game would. Are people still choosing football over the NBA, even if you add stakes to these NBA games? I really want to know what the answer is going to be. Again, if you're listening on Saturday, maybe listen to Friday's show, maybe not, or do the research yourself. I don't know. It's weird asking people to do things themselves. That's kind of my job, is to spoon feed everything for you as you're listening. But, you know, just look and see what the ratings on that Nuggets game were, and look at the ratings for what the Jaguars and Dolphins game was. There, it's pretty easy to find. Just Google Nielsen report, I guess. Either way, you can just look at it, and there's always reports on the ratings. It might take two Google searches or DuckDuckGo if you don't want people stealing your data. Again, for people who don't like Google stealing your data, you let it happen. You know the ramifications. You like convenience. But anyways, check that out. This is just something I'm very interested in, is to see how the ratings work here. We got 10 minutes left here in the show, so the last thing I wanted to do here was division retractions. So, we make predictions at the start of the year. Everyone makes predictions at the start of the year. I make predictions at the start of the year. The people you see on TV make predictions at the start of the year. I'm guessing Martez made projections at the beginning of the season. And so after 2 weeks, it's pretty tough to draw conclusions, and it's more often than not an overreaction. However, there are some situations, whether it be injuries, bad projections, or any myriad of small reasons, many preseason projections end up being loud wrong. And the more conviction we have on preseason evaluations, I go back and forth. Sometimes I have a very strong conviction. Sometimes it's a loose conviction. Sometimes I'm just concerned with being right. And so I take the most broad stance possible to say, you know, I was right about X team at the end of the season or halfway through the season or even in week three. I can say definitively with confidence I was right about the Arizona Cardinals and I was spot on with the Houston Texans and I was spot on with the Baltimore Ravens. And so with that being said, that are necessary before we get to week three as we update information when we have more results. And we have more results, we have more information. Let's update that information. We don't have to double down on things we know are loud wrong from the beginning of the season. So let's start with the NFC South. Is it possible that the NFC South is the worst division in the NFC? Unfortunately, no. The NFC East still exists. However, this has been a very shaky start for the Saints, Falcons, and Buccaneers. The Panthers also exist in this division. We expected them to finish a distant fourth. They will finish a distant fourth. Check out Wednesday's podcast if you're interested more on the way too much breakdown of the Carolina Panthers. If you were to pick a best unit in the NFC South, you'd have to go with New Orleans Saints defense. And I say have to because the rest are just pretty middle of the pack. Through two games, very early, the Saints have the fifth best defense in the NFL, even with a 34-point drubbing at the hands of the Raiders. Last week with the Stripe-Hide Bengals, we hypothesized about whether or not the Saints would be all right without Michael Thomas. It appears the answer is no. In week two, they just went short yardage with Alvin Kamara, and he kind of did all the offense. And it, you know, it looked pretty bad because now Drew Brees, before we knew Drew Brees couldn't make the deep throws, but now he can't even make the medium throws. And so his success in his Hall of Fame career has been that he is the most precise and accurate quarterback that has ever lived. And so Sean Payton built an offense around the most precise quarterback to ever live. Taysom Hill might make a pass play, might not. They haven't used him that deep. And so now we see Drew Brees as the weak link of that offense. And because, total embarrassment, the Buccaneers might sneak into the playoffs by default in the NFC. For a decade, the NFC was a conference defined by its depth. 11 different franchises have made the Super Bowl in 14 seasons. And no team besides the Green Bay Packers has made more than one NFC championship game since 2013, the Packers have made three. None have resulted in a Super Bowl, but they have been to three. You'd be hard-pressed to find five teams in the NFC this year that look legitimately good in the conference. And I said there were like nine at the start of the year, but the Lions were a team. I was like, they might be good, they might not. We'll see how it works out. Obviously, they've blown a couple starts this season. They've had double-digit leads, lost both of them, yada, yada, yada. Vikings have sputtered out the gate. I thought they would be pretty bad. They have sputtered out the gate. I thought the Eagles would be really good, and they have fallen apart because of injuries. The Falcons' defense is atrocious this year. The NFC West is 7-1, but eventually those teams will either all play against each other and even out, so everyone's loss total will go up, or one of these teams is going to go 1-5 and just fall off the face of the earth. Probably the Rams. Even Dallas has been a disappointment to start the season, and so now you're left with like five teams. It's the guys in the NFC West, like the Seahawks and the Cardinals and the 49ers. You've got the Packers are good and the Saints are pretty good. That's all you pretty much got at this point. So I think the Bucs, who were just two games out of the playoffs last year, got a slight upgrade at quarterback from Tom Brady to Jameis Winston because he's slightly more accurate. He's not that good, and I didn't think it would be good enough to make the playoffs because I thought there were better teams than the Bucs. Much more of that will be clear once the Bucs play the Falcons twice. So let's go to the AFC West. Like the antithesis of the Carolina Panthers, we all assumed the Chiefs would win the AFC West. The Chiefs have a 95%+ chance of winning at the AFC West. Fun fact, Patrick Mahomes has never been outside of first place in his career, in the AFC West that might happen this week if they lose to Baltimore. He might fall out of first place. Oh, we got music in there?
I'm sorry, I didn't warn you, but I figured I'd play some music behind you. You can tell me if you like it or not.
Oh,
I'm
awesome.
Sorry.
Yeah. But, oh, no problem, my man. I love it. Anyway, the division was a bit of a toss-up, and it felt like many of those toss-ups would get settled in head-to-head matchups. The team that got X number of wins would have a crack at one of those wild card spots, and that picture in the AFC West has become a bit more clear with time here. And so, the Denver Broncos lost Von Miller before the season even started, which stumped a defense that was already middle of the pack, struggling to figure itself out, and they may have a quarterback in Drew Lock, maybe not. Who knows? No way, not you or me, not Martez, not even Drew Lock does. Now, you know the Broncos don't have a quarterback. They have Jeff Driscoll, and they have Blake Bortles for the next 6 weeks. And so, Denver will get Drew Lock back in time for their Chargers and Raiders matchups, but they've also lost Cortland Sutton, the most hyped-up wide receiver of the entire offseason. And he tore his ACL. He's gone for the season, all compounded with the fact that the Broncos are already 0-2. They've got upcoming matchups with Tampa, New England, and Kansas City before they even get Drew Lock back. So they are staring down 1-5 mediocrity at this point. Las Vegas is 2-0. The Chargers are 1-1, but they also showed up Mahomes pretty well in that first game. And so the Chargers defense dominated. Ooh, I like this song. Awesome pick. The Chargers defense dominated Mahomes for three quarters before salting away the game in overtime. All of us expected Mahomes to go right down the field, tie the game, and everything would go the Chiefs' way, and the Chargers can only view that game as a success. Like, they were very successful. They are now way ahead of Denver, with the gap only poised to grow larger. And so I thought the Chiefs would be in first, the Broncos, Chargers, and Raiders would be decided by who wins their division. Who wins their head-to-head matchup. The Chiefs will win the division. Whoever wins the head-to-head matchup would have a shot at the playoffs. Chargers, Raiders, or Broncos. It seems very clear now that the Broncos have fallen out of that race. All Denver can hope for is to be within striking distance at 1-2. The Raiders lose to the Patriots. Maybe the Chargers lose to the Panthers. Who knows? But Denver can only hope for striking distance to hope for Drew Lock, who, again, nobody really knows what he's capable of. And we haven't seen enough games to get any inclination because he was only there one mediocre Monday night game against the Titans and half a quarter against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Well, anyways, we'll figure that out. Those are our retractions. This has been the Take It Easy Radio Show. Thank you, everybody, for stopping in this week. Check us out again. Follow at Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. Follow the Take It Easy podcast feed. Download, rate, review, subscribe there. Be on the lookout for more fun content, NFL Week 3. Enjoy some Dolphins and Jaguars, I guess. Enjoy some NBA playoffs, some NHL, some MLB. If you watch college football, keep watching college football. All that fun stuff. Thank you, everybody, for stopping in today. I greatly appreciate each and every one of you for coming by and spending some time here and getting to talk. Remember, make decisions for yourself. What do you view as adding value to your life? I've made decisions. I've talked about it in essence, in extent for a few weeks. Maybe ask yourself that question. Thank you, everybody, and have a great week. We'll be right back.